Hello and welcome to the Let's Get Men Talking podcast, where our aim is to change the narrative surrounding masculinity and men's mental health by getting men talking. You can find us at letsgetmentalking.com, on Instagram at letsgetmentalking, on Twitter at letsgetmental_, and on LinkedIn for corporate inquiries. This episode is sponsored by Polite Club, a clothing brand that exists to inspire and empower people to talk about how they feel, and their aim is to connect the world on a deeper level. You can buy Let's Get Men Talking t-shirts, caps, and beanies at politeclub.co.uk. Today, I am talking to one of London's best yoga teachers, Chris McGee, who uses yoga to help students explore, play, and test boundaries for their mental and their physical fitness. Chris, how's it going?
Very good, thank you. That was probably too polite of an introduction. who did you pay to get those words?
Well, it'd be awkward if I was rude from the get-go, but no. I think I've even been to a class many, many years ago, and it's definitely, you know, even going to one class is something that stood out to me in my experience with London yoga teachers. So it's really great to talk to you today, because the way that you carry out your classes and stuff is super relatable and fun, and I think we're going to have a great chat.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm looking forward to it.
So let's dive right in. What are your, as a yoga teacher, obviously you're very in touch with your physical and mental intelligence, I guess. What are your experiences with mental health?
I think I've always had a fairly healthy understanding of myself. Even sort of like before the days that I was a yoga teacher, I don't feel there was ever a point when I really suffered. But I was also quite a kind of like an extroverted character. So I was always very happy to talk about my, how I was feeling or what was going on with whomever at whatever point in time. And I think that probably led itself then to kind of like having a very healthy kind of like mental space, no matter what I was doing, because I was never afraid to talk to people. I suppose it would have been a very different story if I was much more introverted, because then that's the kind of the person that doesn't want to share, doesn't want to talk, that ends up then potentially like repressing or then struggling with something, because it builds up a lot more over time.
So do you think that your attitude towards sort of openness and exploring and conversation has led to your now career in yoga?
I would definitely say that it's a contributing factor. You know, all of the things in your life pull into, you might not recognize it at the time, but all of the experiences that you have, all of the learning that you do, all of the different choices that you make ultimately lead you to the place where you are now. And, you know, I'm in a position where I don't think I was meant to do anything else. I think I was meant to be here to share yoga with people, to build communities, to kind of help people connect with each other, not only to themselves physically and mentally, but connect to each other in the sense of a community and the greater scale of like individuals who are there to support you and help you on your journey through life. Because we're not isolated. We're not sort of meant to be isolated as a species. And that is, you know, the other kind of arm of the yoga practice as well. It's very much about doing the work for yourself, but it's also about understanding your place within the bigger picture, like the community of people around you, but also like kind of your bigger picture within the world itself as a whole. And I think that like as time has gone on, I've been teaching for just about 10 years now. And when I look back, everything that I did before, I loved acting and performing and all of those things. But ultimately that is using your voice to convey a message, or the ability to step up and hold space on a stage or whatever it happens to be, is the same as facilitating a class. I'm there to hold space, but now the holding space is in a very different capacity. The holding of space is not to keep your attention so I can give you all of the information. The holding of space is for you to be able to kind of work it out for yourself. And all of those things kind of feed in. So yeah, I would say that it's probably the natural characteristics that you have, but also just a combination of life experience that has brought me to this point. And yeah, and ultimately I'm super happy doing what I do. I think the answer would be very different if someone was unhappy, you know, if they were in a position or if they were in a job that they really didn't enjoy, then they'd probably be like, no, I'm not destined for this. Whereas like I definitely am. I'm super passionate and super, super happy about what I do. So
it's really great to speak to someone who is able to say, I'm happy about my job and I'm happy at work. And I think some people spend their whole lives working out what they want to do and why they want to do it. And often we forget the main goal, which is like to enjoy your day-to-day life. And there are careers out there that exist that you can be that person and like be your best self. How old were you when you got into yoga?
I first started practicing when I was 19, I think. I was 18 or 19. And it was a sort of a means to a physical end, because I had a lot of injuries from playing rugby all throughout my childhood. And I was at drama school at the time, and it was kind of like limiting my ability to move well. So, you know, I couldn't turn my head properly to the left, and I couldn't lift my left arm up above my head. And, you know, there was all of these different kind of patterns that were playing out on stage or in characters, which were not, it was not a character choice. It was me. And I couldn't then sort of like separate myself from the part. And because of that, the movement teacher forbid me from playing rugby anymore. So that was the end of my never blossoming rugby career, stopped me from doing anything that was tension building. So no more lifting weights, no more kind of like high intensity gym work. And she made me go and do yoga instead as a method of kind of trying to break down the tension in my body so that I could move better. Ultimately was the kind of the first pathway in. And yeah, it's not one that I would recommend for people. Having someone make you go generally doesn't put you in the best headspace to be there. So I always say that if you know, you can lead the horse to water, but you can't make it drink. And the only reason why I kind of stuck through it was purely because of my stubbornness and not anything else. I had the goal in mind that the more I suffered my way through this activity that she's making me do, then the sooner I can get back to doing the things that I like to do. So I was like, I'll just keep going. And I was already going to the gym four times a week anyway. So I'll just walk past the weights bit that I used to go into, and I'll go into that little room at the back with the person who teaches the stretching. And, you know, that'll kind of, you know, if I continue to do that, the more I do it, the faster I do it, the faster I'll recover. And the sooner I can stop was the sort of, was the mindset when I first started to practice. And yeah, it was super unhelpful, because for 6 months I got no benefit whatsoever. I was incredibly frustrated, and that's why I said that it's simply my stubbornness that took me back. And it kind of took to that 6 month mark where I was at the point of being ready to quit, to give up. I was like, this, you know, this thing doesn't work. She's told me to go and do this thing. It doesn't work. My body doesn't feel any better. I don't feel any looser. Nothing has changed. All I am is frustrated with this and with the fact that I can't do the things that I enjoy. So I was kind of at breaking point. And what's your policy around swearing on the podcast?
We've had just our first before I say on the first episode. So.
Oh, okay, perfect. So I arrived at what I often refer to as the fuck it moment, where I was just like, it doesn't matter. Right. I keep going to this class thinking that I have to win and that I have to do all of the things. And I'm looking around the room and I'm seeing all of these incredibly bendy people that are very graceful, or seeing these people that have been practicing all the time. They look very serene and very relaxed in all these postures. And here I am shaking and sweating and forcing and like almost leaving feeling more tense than when I arrived. And the day that moment arrived, I was kind of like, do you know what? Like, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if I can do the shapes or not. It doesn't matter if I'm the best or the worst or whatever. And had a real kind of like ego surrender. And that day is the first day then that I let myself fall asleep in Shavasana. You know, up to that point, I had sat at the end with my eyes open and been that person. And then all of a sudden you fall asleep in Shavasana. And then the remainder of that week, I was like, oh, wow, my body actually feels really good. Like there has been some sort of like a release. Like it was a real light bulb moment. There was a real turning of the corner, because my mental state was inhibiting physical response, because my mind was so locked on the fact that I was there by someone else's hand, and I was there for a very specific purpose, and I had a very specific set of like preconceived ideas as to what needed to happen in order for me to be successful in that room. Then I never allowed myself to get the true release, the true benefit that came from the practice until you kind of drop that whole story. And as soon as I dropped that whole story, then all of a sudden it was like the floodgates opened, and then my body started to heal, and I was moving better, and I was sleeping better, and, you know, and all of those wonderful things started to happen. But it had to originate from a shift in my mind before it was a shift for, like, physically in my body, even though I was there initially only for a physical experience.
Wow. I really can resonate and recognize the mindset that you were in before you gave into this sort of benefits of yoga. It's not the first time you'd hear a guy who lifts weights and plays rugby say, yoga's not for me, that's not going to give me the benefits that I want. Do you now, like, lift weights or play rugby or anything?
I don't play rugby anymore. I do lift weights sometimes, sort of very rarely. I like to do classes just because I more enjoy sort of like a community experience of those things. It would be very rare that I sort of am like down the gym, like bench pressing or whatever, but I do enjoy, you know, everything is in balance is the thing that I would say. And, you know, yoga is magnificent, but it is not not a complete discipline by any stretch of the imagination, nor do I think there is any one complete discipline. I think you have to have a kind of like a healthy balance of a lot of different strains of things in order to be at your sort of at your physical peak, as it were, if you want to be really kind of like well maintained and well looked after. I'm sure your other half can probably speak to this much more than I can, because he's such a wizard when it comes to injuries and things like that. But injury prevention a lot of the time is overuse of a specific skill set with either negligence of the kind of the recovery, the repair, or the counterbalance of whatever it happens to be. So, you know, for example, yoga does a lot of pushing into the floor in planks, pushing into the floor in down dog, pushing into the floor in handstand or whatever else it happens to be. And there is no pulling whatsoever. So the shoulder then has the potential to become very imbalanced by the repetitious action, if you're only doing that one action. So then, you know, a great compliment for someone who's doing a lot of that is, oh, I need to make sure that I do some sets of pull-ups, or I need to make sure that I go and do rock climbing, or, you know, you go and do something that's a much more sort of rowing or whatever it happens to be. There's a much more kind of pull-orientated activity, because then that means that your shoulder is kind of getting a healthy balance from both sides. Yeah. And that, you know, that kind of ethos filters over the whole course of a week, because I'm also, there's things that I don't like to do, but I know that they're good for me. So there's a kind of a, I think there's something almost satisfying about doing the things that either you're not good, like, you know, quote unquote good at, or doing the things that you know are good for, you know, it's like making children eat their vegetables, right? They have to eat their vegetables because it's good for them, but they definitely don't want to do it. So we almost have that conversation in our mind when it comes to things like this, like running, for example. Do you run?
Do I run?
Yes.
I did until I did 15 miles at the beginning of lockdown with Ben, and then I decided to have a break.
Cool. Great. I love that. That's a great idea. I'm all for taking a break from running, because I personally hate running, right? But there is a benefit that comes from an activity like that that I don't get from the chosen activities that I like to do. There is a certain cardiovascular benefit, which is, you know, if I do a lot of handstand training, or if I do a lot of kind of like body weight training, or if I do a lot of yoga, you know, yes, you break a sweat, and yes, there is kind of merit to it, but do you take your cardiovascular capabilities into that sort of like higher end? No, absolutely not. So then you have to do something like running, or spinning, or, you know, whatever it happens to be, going out for a big old bike ride or whatever, in order to then make sure that your cardiovascular health is maintained and looked after. So that is, again, like another potential downfall if you're focused solely on doing one activity or one thing, or the thing that you're kind of conditioned to do. There is many, many benefits, physical and mental, to kind of like having a balanced and a well-rounded regime, you know, both training and lifestyle wise. And I think that that's where I ended up settling I did just do yoga for a long time, but yeah, it's not the way that I currently think that things should be happening.
Yeah, I think that pulling and hanging off bars and climbing mountains, and it's a big spine decompressor as well for people who spend a lot of time at a desk. So having that, and yoga's created on yin and yang, and sort of having that whole balance and that whole ethos. So it makes a lot of sense. I really want to know once and for all, for everyone who says I can't get into yoga because I need to spend that time at the gym getting strong, or playing rugby getting strong, what's the deal with that? Why do people think, can you get strong through yoga, A, and B, why do people think you can't?
You absolutely can. Look at anyone who's dedicated themselves to any type of body weight, workout structuring, like you see kind of like bar stars, and you see all those guys doing the crazy, and the calisthenics guys that are on bars in the middle of parks, and they're doing front levers and they're doing whatever else, they're doing combinations of body weight training. And yoga as a system, certainly as well, like when you think of a lot of the kind of what we call like the more modern approach to yoga, where it can be very athletic. And there's an inclusion of a lot more kind of strength oriented postures. Like you'll see a lot more handstands, you'll see a lot more things of that nature than you perhaps once would have. There is then the capability to be constantly like conditioning and training yourselves for these things. Again, it's a very specific type of strength. It's not that you don't get strength. You just get a very specific type of strength. Yes. If you're looking to increase mass, of course you have to put your body under an external load. Like hypertrophy is only going to come through external load, really, if you are looking to gain a lot of size. But quite often people aren't interested in size. People are interested in definition and overall kind of like strength. And if all of a sudden you can move better, sleep better, you can touch your toes and you couldn't touch your toes before, that for a lot of folks, even though it's not like in their mind as what they wanted to get, it's quite a feat if you haven't been able to do it before. And you then notice the kind of the physical shift in your body. I think some of the most amazing athletes that we ever see are gymnasts and like circus performers, because they have such incredible strength, but they also have such an incredible range of motion. Their flexibility is insane, and they have strength throughout the entire range of their motion. So there is no point of weakness. It's that person that you see and they're holding their leg up in the air beside their shoulder with no arms, and their leg is just up there. And you're like, how is that even possible? When I try and lift my leg up, I can't get it past 90 degrees, and they've conditioned themselves not only to have that dexterity within their hip, but also that strength throughout that full range. And that sort of combination kind of makes you bulletproof a little bit, because you're not then at any potential risk, right? The tightness is a risk, because yes, the muscle might have strength, but the range is so small that there's then a possibility that you get pulled out of your range, and with that then muscles tearing or snapping or whatever it is. And the looseness, the flexibility is also a risk, because you're then in a place where you don't have any control. There is no stability. And that's when the joint might take the brunt of the work rather than the muscle being there to support whatever the action happens to be. And I'll often say that first yoga will give you what you need, then it'll give you what you want. So the guy that's been at the gym that then wants to come and do yoga probably is already quite strong in certain regards, and certainly in terms of like moving things. A lot of yoga is kind of isometric strength as well. So there's a lot of like held postures. So again, it may or may not, their strength may or may not translate, but let's look at Chaturanga just as a specific example. That's a yoga push-up, right? For want of a better word. Lads have no problem with it whatsoever. A lot of women struggle massively. Down dog, another very common yoga posture. Women generally have no problem with it whatsoever. Men have a huge problem with it, right? One is, both require strength and both require a certain level of flexibility and body awareness. One requires you to have a lot more shoulder flexion. One requires you to have a lot more upper body strength. So if you've got the shoulder flexion, then down dog is a breeze. If you don't have the upper body strength, chaturanga is hard. And the yoga will make you do the things like, you know, and there is an infinite number of examples that I could give, like of possible kind of like combinations of these things. Every pose is everything. That's the other thing that I really like about it. Every pose has one of these components at play. Something is lengthening. Something is strengthening. There's stability. There's balance. There is focus. There is breath. There is kind of like all of the things kind of rolled into one. And whatever one thing you happen to be lacking or happen to be struggling with, then that's kind of the thing that gets a spotlight shone on it. And you become really aware where you're like, I literally cannot balance on one leg. Or I did not know that I'm actually like leaning to the left all the time. And I didn't realize that I lean to the left. I thought I was in the center, but every time I'm going into a pose, the teacher keeps coming and like pushing me back to the right. And now it feels like I'm leaning to the right, but they're telling me that that's the center, right? So the practice as a whole gives you like all of these points of feedback to sort of circle back around. I stopped doing anything but yoga for, I'd say, maybe 2 years. I felt incredibly strong. You know, the other thing to remember is that being ripped, which is right, ultimately they want the aesthetics. the strength is kind of here and there because they're not necessarily testing their numbers, right? But they want the aesthetics. The aesthetics come from diet primarily. So if you're eating well, you're conscious about what you're putting into your body, you're conscious about what you're doing with your body, you're conscious about your sleep, about your stress levels, like all of these things, then ultimately you're going to probably get positive results and you're going to end up looking better as a lovely byproduct of taking care of all of those things. And yeah, yoga can definitely be a component where you build a lot of strength. But that might not be what they're there for. If they already go and do a lot of gym work, then cool. But trust that yoga has the benefit that the gym work doesn't have. The stretching that you're meant to do with all of your weight sessions and you don't do it, use this as an opportunity to get that work in. And that work is equally valid because that work then means that you're going to be able to lift more because your body moves better. You have healthier patterns. You have more control. You have more range to get strong in rather than feeling your body kind of like closing down and locking down and then injury coming from those things.
I find it really interesting because if you're really that into your lifting or getting ripped or what was the other word I used earlier, stacked, then doing yoga will really take that to the next level and support that. And I think a lot of people who I speak to think that if they, especially who want to get stacked or jacked or ripped, they think that taking that time away that they would be in the gym is then going to inhibit their physical growth. And then you've actually just proven that that's completely not true and it's actually going to help their physical growth.
And yeah. To be fair, the likelihood of someone training 7 days a week is slim to none. Like this person that's like, oh, but I can't sacrifice my, you know, I can't sacrifice my leg day or my chest day to go and do a bit of yoga instead or whatever. It's like, well, do you train 7 days a week? And then they'll be like, no, I have a 4 day split or I have a 5 day split and I do two leg days and one push, one pull or, you know, or whatever else it is. By the way, I was a personal trainer before I was a yoga teacher, which is why I have my, you know, I have my gym hat on sometimes as well with these things. An active recovery day is something that's becoming more and more prominent at all times. So your rest day where you used to just do nothing is now transitioned into an active recovery day. And yoga, depending on the style of yoga that you go to, can be a perfect active recovery day because actually you're not putting yourself under great duress. There's not an excessive requirement of strength or cardiovascular endurance or whatever it is. So you're able to keep your body in a fairly recovered zone, but then also do all of that great work of like your flexibility and whatever else that we talked about before that's then ultimately going to feed back into you having greater longevity with your lifts and with your other sessions and with your other activities, so that then you get more benefit from everything. You know, one hand just complements the other.
Totally. And actually, if you're quite drawn to these, so in yoga they use yin and yang, and yin is the sort of more relaxed side of you, and yang is the energetic kind of strengthy heat side of you, I think. Is that right?
Yes, correct. Okay.
So if you're quite a yang person, you're probably likely to be drawn to quite energetic exercises because you've got that energy, when actually what you need is a bit more yin in your life to bring you down and bring that balance. Because if you're constantly hyperactive and feeding that, you can kind of, it can really kind of cause havoc with your sleep or your energy or things like that. So how are you different as a person to your rugby playing self and then now as a yogi?
I was incredibly hot-headed, I would say. I was quick to anger and quick to kind of like let myself get to an extreme. And normally an extreme in a negative sense, like not necessarily an extreme in a positive sense, in hindsight. And I think that has kind of like completely changed. And I had a conversation with one of my best friends from school, and I'll still see him, you know, if I'm home or if they're visiting London, I'll see them a couple of times a year. And one of the things that we were chatting about, someone brought it up in the group that we were with back when we were allowed to be in groups of people. Remember what that was like? They said, what element do you think best describes your personality? And we were all kind of like talking about whatever it is. And I actually said, I was like, well, I think it's probably a combination of like earth and water. If I had to guess, sort of like a combination of earth and water. I was like, it's, you know, we are all things, but I was like, I think if I'm leaning in one particular direction, it's kind of more in that direction. But had you asked me at 18, it would have been all fire. And, you know, not that necessarily goes away. Yes, there are still moments where that kind of like spark erupts, or there are things that kind of trigger you and take you to that place, justified or unjustified, you know, in terms of how you respond in certain moments. But I would say that's not my baseline anymore. I don't kind of, you know, one of my teachers often referred to it as like your limbic threshold, like the limbic cup, like when people are sort of pouring things onto you, like where is the line that I then lose my shit or whatever it is. And the more sort of tools that you have in your toolbox to keep the level low and the line high, then you've always got like space for control over how you respond in a certain moment, rather than it being reactionary. And I think that's why I specifically use the word respond rather than react, because one is conscious and one is unconscious. So that is the kind of that I would say is the big, if I had to use it as an example, is the biggest shift that's happened throughout my journey of yoga and just kind of growing up and becoming an adult, is that I find that I'm much less reactive and I'm much more responsive in my interactions with other people.
It's such a good way to put it, because there are studies that show that part of the kind of output of the fact that we do encourage guys not to express their emotions when they're growing up, and that's the narrative surrounding masculinity in the world that we currently live in, that does equal either suppression and suffering in silence or anger. And that's not to say that if you do yoga you never get, you know, unhappy or never get anxiety or whatever it is, but it is to say that you can, it is one way of feeding a different side of your personality that already exists within you. As you say, you know, people, I've read once that people are made up of five different personality types, and you can change that depending on who you're hanging around with that day or the things that you do within your day, and you can kind of feed your different personalities and sort of choose which of these people you want to be.
Have you heard the parable of two wolves before?
It sounds familiar, but I Remind me.
That is a it's a story of it's effectively the story of yin and yang, told through a slightly different lens. And it's like a grandfather or sort of like a village elder telling a young boy about the fact that there are two wolves that live inside you that are at constant battle with one another. And one wolf is, you know, love and happiness and joy and all of the sort of like the good. And one wolf is anger and jealousy and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. And sort of tells this story to the child, and the child says, "Well, who wins the battle?" And he says, "The wolf you feed." And it's kind of just a nice way to summarize that, I think, because it's not that we don't have, like, people are like, "Oh, you're so calm." No, I'm also angry, you know. But that has its place. Rather than that being a default, it's kind of, you know, that is but one. We are all things all the time. So as much as I have the capacity to be angry, I also have the capacity to be calm and loving. As much as I have the capacity to be lazy, I have the capacity to be disciplined, you know, and like everything exists in balance. And it's then, again, it comes back to that idea of like consciousness. Am I aware of what I'm doing? Because then I get to make a choice. Consciousness gives me the choice to go that way or that way, rather than I have to go this way because I'm not thinking about it. I'm just reacting to whatever's being presented to me.
And as you said earlier, yoga can be super challenging, especially your first classes. I remember that feeling in my first class of like, I can't move and breathe. Why do they keep telling me to breathe? I got my breath again. It took a really long time to get through that bit.
It's like, why has it been so different? I swear, day to day, breathing is not this hard. And now all of a sudden, breathing is like is the hardest thing in the world. I can't get it. I can't get the breathing to work.
It can be so frustrating. And then the better you get, the more things you want to do, like handstands and all that kind of stuff. And so it's important to challenge yourself, and putting yourself outside of your comfort zone is one of the best things for your mental health for a lot of people. But that's not to say that obviously yoga instructors, people have a big expectation, I think, around yoga instructors and this calmness and this big presentation that we see on Instagram around who you are because you're a yoga instructor. Have you ever suffered, or do you ever get anxiety or depression or your own kind of battles with mental well-being?
I don't think I've ever had anything to that extreme level, but I would certainly say that there are fluctuations. And again, that will always come from circumstance and what's going on. I think this year in particular has been a real wake-up call for a lot of people that what we once kind of stigmatized and considered to be like a sort of like a taboo or something that affects only the few is now kind of like broadly accepted that, like, oh wow, we can all have something that impacts us greatly, you know, the lockdown being the sort of the catalyst for all of these, you know, terrible statistics that we're seeing about the rising rates of depression and the rising rates of suicide amongst young people and things of that nature. And I think even I have felt that pressure, and I feel like generally I'm always in a very good space. I always feel pretty balanced. Like, I don't tend to, you know, I don't wake up on a day and feel sad or down. I normally wake up on a day and I feel pretty, sometimes I feel tired. that's probably about as, you know, as low as the morning starts. But that kind of the toll that something like that takes on you over time, I certainly know that my attitude in, when did we start the first one? March. My attitude in March compared to my attitude in June was probably a shift. Even though you hadn't been conscious of it, it was kind of grinding you down a little bit. And then I think when we came out of that first lockdown, it became really apparent to me that I was like, oh wow, that had a toll on me, even though I am in a position where I'm actually very emotionally aware and like sort of like mentally aware of my state and my well-being. And I also have several tools that I use in order to mitigate those factors. You know, I have my yoga practice. I have my meditation practice. I have my community of people. I had my network of people to be talking to. I was connect. I was out walking. I was connecting to nature. I was doing all of these things that have a positive impact. And yet I still felt that there was a downturn. Yeah. So I was like, what on earth would have happened or could have happened to someone who didn't have any of those outlets or any of those tools in their toolbox? Like what sort of a drastic shift in their mental state, you know, would there have been? So I think there's been a real awakening this year around the discussion of mental health. And I think that that's going to be a huge positive going forward. I think my example is probably limited, but that's kind of as close as I've come to the experience of any of those more serious afflictions.
So interesting to hear how you have this toolbox now, and then and how you were when before you found yoga, and you know, going straight to anger, you know, going straight to red from zero, and who mm-hmm. you are as a person, how that's transitioned. And it is a shame that there is a little bit of a stigma perhaps in yoga that it's for women or mostly run by women. And I can see how that's hard for a lot of guys to turn up to a yoga class if they think that they're going to be the only guy. And it seems like that's changing. You've got yourself, you've got Boys of Yoga, you've got some quite cool initiatives to actively change that. But do you still feel like there is a little bit of a stigma? And have you seen that change in your 10-year career?
Yeah, absolutely. There has been a shift. I think as well, you know, I'm in a fortunate position because the initial barrier to entry, and I felt this myself when I started to practice, the initial barrier to entry is familiarity, right? If I'm unfamiliar with the discipline, I'm unfamiliar with the breathing, I'm unfamiliar with the language that they use, and I'm unfamiliar with the community of people. None of these people are anything like me. And that could be male to female. That could be young to old. That could be a racial thing. It could be whatever, right? It's like there is no similarity. And therefore, I'm instantly I have a wall up. I have a guard up. I feel removed from what potentially is going on. And that then might be the thing that prevents the person from going. And a lot of what I've seen over the course of my teaching is that I get a lot of men that come to class. I would still say it's probably at least, 60-40, probably on a good day. But that was once upon a time, 90 or 95-10. And again, it obviously depends on the size of the class and whatnot. And a lot of the times people will come to class and they'll be like, that was so hard, or that was wow, or that was strong, or there was this or whatever else. And then they'll go and they'll find a male friend of theirs that they know needs to do some yoga. And they'll say, you should come to this guy. And they show up and here I am at, 85 kilos. I still look like a rugby player. I'm still broad. I'm still like whatever. I don't look like, I'm not a waif. I don't look like a typical yogi, aside from maybe the man bun and the beard. but I still have a much more typical male physique that would be more associated with the gym or whatever it happens to be. And they arrive and they're like, oh, that's a guy like me. Okay. Well, if he can do it, I can do it. And then instantly that's just that mindset shift that allows them to just give it a go. And then they look further down the line and they go, hold on a second. You can do full splits and you can put your leg behind your head and you can do this and this and this. And it's like, well, how can you do that? And I can't do that. And we're the same. And the short answer is practice. So then as soon as they know what's possible, like these things are not exclusively for the female portion of the class. Like all of these things are possible for you in your body as well. To some extent, of course, people will have certain physical limitations depending on bone structure or, whatever else it is. We could kind of go down a whole other rabbit hole about those sorts of things. But certainly the vast majority of things are available for everyone if you're willing to put the time into it. if you're willing to show up and continue to do the thing. But the reason why it's difficult is because, as I said, that first part of the practice, you're not working on the things you want to work on. You're working on the things you need to work on. And need versus want is is a very different thing, right? The yoga is telling you, you need to get stronger, or the yoga is telling you, you need to open those shoulders up, or you need to lengthen those hamstrings, or, you know, whatever it happens to be, or you need to slow down. You're trying to rush all the time. You don't need to rush. Like, oh yeah, you're that go, 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 go person. Well, we're going to pump the brakes today and let's see you deal with that as kind of like a, but you know, that's the beauty about the practice, is that you don't have to be able to do all the things to show up. You don't have to be able to do what the person beside you does, because they're doing their own thing. You know, it's a facilitation of space. It's an offering. We're holding space for everyone to carve their own path, right? Every path equally valid, all leads to the same destination, because you're not like me. I'm not like the next person. In the grand sense, we are all one. Yes, we are all human beings and that outlook on it all. But on an individual perspective, the circumstances that have brought you to the mat in this moment in your life are not the same as the person that, you know, that I am, and the circumstances that have brought me there. And I have this as well. There's a couple of friends of mine, identical twins, that come to practice, and they're not the same. They don't move in the same way. They are identical twins. The closest that you could possibly get to sharing the DNA of another person. And, you know, they still live together and they have similar jobs and whatever else, but they're not the same. You know, they have differences as you see them, like practicing side by side. And that's kind of like a really nice analogy, I think, sometimes, if it's like, it doesn't matter what that person is doing. Because like a lot of the time it's competitive, right? It's ego driven. We are like, what's going on over there? That person did that. Okay, so I have to do that as well, or else I'm no good. It's all just made up. It's all a story that people make up. And the sooner we can learn to kind of let go of that story, the more benefit you get from the practice. And that's also why I like to say to men, this is not a replacement. This is a complement to the other things that you do. If you're thinking, oh, but I'm not going to get my strength, and I'm not going to get whatever else, fine. Continue to get all of those things over there, but also have a little go at this, because this might give you something else that's more, that then helps you when you get back over there. And it's kind of like, you know, hopefully it takes the competitiveness out of it. If they're not there looking for the same things as they're looking for from their workout, and as soon as it's not competitive, then hopefully their mind relaxes a little bit, and then they're able to just kind of enjoy the moment for whatever it is, rather than thinking too much about the expectations that they place around the discipline.
It seems as though comparison or self-comparison is one of the biggest demons of anxiety, depression, and anything else that sits within you when you're struggling with your own mental health. And even if you're really emotionally intelligent, it's really hard not to have those internal monologues, those internal conversations. What is it about yoga? Because the first class you go to, you think everyone's looking at me and I can't do this, and then suddenly you get that. What is it about yoga that's so good for practicing your mental fitness?
It's a practice of awareness. It's everything about it is to become aware. Why is breathing in your day-to-day life so easy, and why is breathing in your yoga practice so hard? What do you think the answer to that question is?
I don't think we do breathe properly day to day. I think many people hold their breath when they're sitting at their desk without realizing. So yeah, it's when you're aware that you're kind of not really doing it right.
It's holding your breath, or it's shallowness of breath, or it's an automatic system that we have, right? You're not thinking about breathing. But as soon as you become aware of it, then you become aware of all those factors that you just discussed. And that is the thing then to process. You're like, but oh, I'm actually only breathing into this little bit of my chest, or I'm like taking these little snatch breaths, and they're asking me to breathe in for a count of four and out for a count of four. And I didn't know if my lungs can get that big, and oh, I don't know if I can hold my breath like that. Or if you then become super aware of like, I'm stressing out in this posture, or I'm trying to force something to happen. And as soon as I try and force something to happen, breath gets held, like everything gets locked up. Like that is, you know, it in a nutshell. the reason why the breath is so prevalent, is so prominent, is because it gives you so much feedback, gives you so much automatic information. If you're not breathing, then you're not in the present moment, because that is the flow of your life in that moment. You're forcing yourself to hold, or you're forcing yourself to close off, because you're trying to project towards some kind of an external thought or judgment or expectation or whatever it happens to be. And, you know, yoga as a practice overall brings you into the present moment. Like, there's a reason why there are no clocks in yoga studios. There's a reason why you leave your phone outside. Why? Because you don't need to check the time. I'm the teacher. I've got a watch. I'll keep us on time. You'll get out of here at the right time. No problem at all. But you give me an hour, so I'll let you go in an hour. Don't worry. People get so caught up about that. How much longer is left? How many calories did I burn? Doesn't matter right now. You can look at all of your data later. All of that stuff will be there, right? That's the beautiful thing about those fancy watches. They save all of that information. I say that mockingly. I am wearing one. So, you know that I'm not judging. I very much appreciate the technology and the feedback that it provides. But it is feedback. It's not in the moment analysis. It's like, oh, I can check that later, rather than I got to check that right now, or I got to know the time right now, or whatever it happens to be. And that's the kind of, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head when you said about the internal monologue that happens. And I think if yoga is not the practice for you, I really resonated with it as a way to be able to understand my mind a lot more, because I was a very physical person. So you use the physical practice as a way to get in, right? And then you can treat the shavasana at the end, or sometimes you have the opportunity to kind of sit and take a moment in meditation before you get to shavasana, depending on the structure of the class that you go to. That kind of let me burn off all of my energy, so that when the time came to sit and be still, I was able to do that. Whereas a lot of the time when you talk about meditation as a discipline on its own, and you say to people, okay, I'd like you to just sit down, be still, and close your eyes. And within 90 seconds, people are like, oh, like fidgeting and moving, and oh, they can't keep still, and they're shuffling, or they're tapping their hands on their knees, or they're opening an eye to see what's going on, or they feel agitated because they can't sit with their thoughts. They're like, oh yeah, but my mind is racing, so I can't get into that. Well, one of the easiest ways to calm your mind down is to burn all of that physical energy off somewhere else. Then ultimately, you think of it at the end of a run, or at the end of a hard workout, or at the end of a game of sport, or whatever it is, you're literally like, and you're able to take that big, oh, that big exhale, and everything kind of like washes over you. And the physical part of your yoga practice is meant to be that. Again, depending on the style that you go to, and whatever else, obviously different styles set up for different things. But, you know, we are using that as a way in. The yoga practice is your way in to that point of stillness. And the awareness that you cultivate and the lessons that you kind of learn about your body over the course of that are equally applicable to your mind. So when you hear the self-talk, when you hear the internal monologue, you're able to sort of almost remove yourself from it. And you're able to realize that, ah, okay, this is what's going on in my mind right now. But that circumstance is not reality necessarily, because those thoughts will go and go and go and go and go, because that is the habit of the mind, right? We have that part of our brain, you know, which is why we have the ability to analyze and often overanalyze the past. And we also have the ability to project and try and predict the future. Right? We're the only species that does those things, really, to a great extent. But because we have both of those at our disposal, those things pull us out of the present moment. So to be able to kind of root yourself in the present moment helps us a lot of the time to, I wouldn't say necessarily turn down the internal monologue, but you get the chance to kind of like pick it apart a little bit more to really see what's relevant, what's not relevant, what's fact and what's conjecture. Like you're able to be a little bit more, you see the bigger picture. So you're able to be a little bit more analytical, perhaps is not the word. You're able to have a greater scope and appreciation of what's helpful, what's not helpful, or what requires action or response and what does not. And you can kind of like, you can start to kind of like divvy up the thoughts. Like the monologue is not a constant stream anymore. A great analogy that is in a book called I Am That, and it's a crazy book. It's a transcription of a man who went to India in search of a guru, and when he goes to find him, this man runs a furniture shop. He's not you know, sitting and holding court and preaching or whatever else. And the guy goes every day with questions and asks him questions, and this man, you know, responds. Sri Matharaj is the guy's name. If anyone's interested in looking at the book, but the whole book is he takes a tape recorder. He says, "Do you mind if I record our conversations?" And the whole book is a transcription of the conversation that they had. So it's all, you don't have to read it kind of cover to cover, but it's really nice because you can flick it open and, you know, whatever page you land on, there's a question. You know, the visitor asks a question and Maharaj responds and gives an answer. And one of the things he talks about, this kind of the relationship between the mind, the body, and the spirit, or the mind, the body, and the soul, or whatever it happens to be, or yourself in the ego sense, the small self, and yourself in the real sense, the higher self, and talks about it's a lake at nighttime, and in the surface of the lake you see the reflection of the moon present overhead. A wind comes and disturbs the water. Your body is the water itself. So the wind, an external factor of some kind, can have an impact on your body. Your mind is the reflection of the moon in the surface of the water, which will also be disturbed or disrupted by whatever the external stimulus is. But you yourself are the moon, and you're unimpacted by either of these things. So there's an ability to take a step back and say that, like, okay, the things that are happening are giving me the mental chatter, are letting that run through my mind, are probably manifesting themselves some way in my body. You know, you see people with their shoulders kind of like scrunched up by their ears and like constantly in like a state of tension. It's like, hey, relax your shoulders. You go, I am. And I'm like, you think you are, but you're definitely not relaxed. Like, you know, relax again, relax a third time, relax a fourth time. Like, how relaxed could you be? And then, like, only when you get to that do you really get to see people kind of like really truly kind of drop into their, like, the natural frame of their, you know, of their skeleton. And like things like that, I always really like it as an analogy because everybody gets it. Like, straight away you go, oh, okay. So this up here thinks that I'm the reflection of the moon, but I'm actually the moon. Like, oh, so the water will change and the reflection will change, but I can still be like whole and complete, and I can observe, I can be aware of all of these things that go on, but still not be impacted on a greater sense of what's going on, because myself, my higher self, my soul, my spirit, whatever you want to call it, has a different placement.
If anything, I just feel like I've done a yoga class listening to that. So, I'm good with it. But
good.
I also wonder how many people relaxed their shoulders just then when you said that. I definitely did it when you spoke about it.
It's really interesting though, because it's those unconscious patterns that we hold in our body, the things that we do over and over again. And this is the same about the idea of unconscious breath or an unconscious thing that's going on in your mind, is that through it running over and over and over again as a reaction rather than as a response to whatever is going on, then makes it so deeply ingrained that it becomes more severe and more severe and more severe. And this is also the thing that we were talking about repression of feelings or repression of talking to people or whatever else. And then the manifestation of those things after you've bottled up over a certain amount of time, it's like that impact is much greater because you've allowed yourself to go to a place of greater tension. Someone that sits with tension in their shoulders day one might very easily be able to relax. But if you sat with tension in your shoulders for a year, it's going to take time for you to be able to move your body back to a more natural kind of like easy state. And that's the exact same as your mind. That's the exact same as your breath. All of it is connected, and all of it is kind of very similar in terms of the pathways and the patterns that exist.
I think that's why yoga is a really important one, because there are so many mental fitness benefits to it. You've got routine, which is really important, giving yourself that time and putting yourself first so that you're more in a more of a place to help other people. You've then got actual practice, which is really important to keep, you know, stick at something, create a routine. Doing something once a month is better, you know, then by the end of the year you've done it 12 times rather than not doing it at all. And if you end up going up to once a week, then good for you. And then you've got community, because you are likely to see the same people every week at the class. And then you've got this sort of undoing as well. You've got this, you know, you kind of undoing yourself and rebuilding yourself back up. And all these things can be so great for mental health, and they're not exclusive to women. And it shouldn't be thought of like that.
Yoga as a discipline, historically, I think it's just because you mentioned gender, yoga as a discipline was created for young men. Yoga was not practiced by women at all until very, very late on in terms of like what we consider the arc of the history of yoga, from somewhere between 5 and 10,000 BCE. To, you know, the kind of the modern era of yoga, which we might consider to be perhaps the last 200 years, maybe less than 200 years, 150 years, women did not practice. It was a discipline for young men. And I specifically use the word discipline because young men often lack discipline. So as a setup, as a structure, that was its like origination. And you think that it was also then great because it was putting these young men in touch with the more yin, the more feminine side of their energy. And again, it's not becoming feminine. That's the other point that I'll make. People are like, oh, it's going to make me all feminine. We are everything. You are masculine and feminine at the same time. That's why yin and yang is such a beautiful kind of expression of it, because you also have the yin in the yang and you have the yang in the yin, the two dots that separate in the two halves of the sort of the swirling circle. If you can sort of picture I actually have it on my t-shirt. Obviously people won't be, you can see it, but other people necessarily might not,
might not see it.
Yeah. But it's, you know, you have feminine in your masculine and you have masculine in your feminine. And you know, you can negotiate the balance of those things in order for it all to be very kind of like smooth and healthy, rather than feeling stuck in one place and then saying like, I have to stay over here so the other end of this, the other side of the seesaw suffers. You know, the aim is that we want to be able to transition between both states and therefore like connect to and express ourselves fully and wholly. And that's, again, the different styles of practice that you might have. But I think that was one of the huge things that the ancient practice saw that those young men needed. And that's kind of why it was structured and everything was geared towards them primarily, because then it gave them those things, it gave them those tools to be able to navigate their lives going forward, be they lifelong yogis or kind of like students of yoga, or just simply to bring them to a space of kind of like wholeness before they embarked on their adult life and their, you know, relationships and their work and whatever else it was.
It's so intriguing, because I've just realized now sitting here talking to you that I always talk about vulnerability being strength, and by being vulnerable, you can, you know, build some of the greatest conversations and the strongest moments in your life. But that's not just true of emotional vulnerability. It's a physical thing as well. You're sitting here saying that if you open yourself up to these physical vulnerabilities and these yin things, you're also going to get physically stronger, because it's going to benefit your weightlifting and your, you know, everything else that you want to do. And if you're not into exercise, same thing, it's still going to physically help you as well. So no matter what your goals are, there really is, you know, it really does sound like an incredible resource for people who want to try it. And if there are people sitting here listening and, you know, having been told your whole lives that perhaps, or seen all the pictures of yoga being marketed, and there are pictures of women, and the same with like yoga retreats, and it's all pictures of women, it does take a while to undo that kind of messaging if you haven't been exposed to following people on Instagram like Chris or other male yoga instructors, where you can physically see that it's just not the case. Do you have any advice? Because I think, you know, obviously finding the right teacher is a game. Like, you need to find someone you can connect to or relate with. But do you have any advice for people who want to dip their toe into these like concepts that you're talking about?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose one of the upsides to the global pandemic and the fact that everything kind of has gone super digital is that we now have a wider variety and a much lower barrier to entry for doing these sorts of things online. Whereas previously, again, there might have been the whole self-talk or the whole narrative of I can't find that time in my day because I, you know, it's going to take me 45 minutes to get over there to that studio to do this thing, or I've got this thing on this week or whatever else. Well, you know, a lot of social calendars really cleared up this year. there's not a lot of big social plans that are like eating up a lot of our spare time. And oh, guess what? You don't actually have to travel and commute anywhere. All you got to do is open the laptop in your living room and just dial in and do a session. And within that, you know, as you said, it's super important to find a teacher that resonates with you. It's also really important to find a style that resonates with you. And this is the kind of, you know, this is where it all can sometimes feel a little bit overwhelming or sometimes feel a little bit confusing, because you look at a timetable of a yoga studio, or sometimes you look at the timetables of the different styles of yoga that go on in your gym or wherever it happens to be. You're kind of like, I don't know where to start. Like, I don't know my Ashtanga from my Vinyasa, from my Hatha, from my Flow to my Power Flow to my Chill to my Restore to my, you know, like whatever else it is. Because there's a lot of kind of different styles and there's a lot of kind of creative names that go along with these things. Try some stuff out. Is the easiest way. You know, if you don't try, you never know. And there is, I'm never reluctant to go and try something new. Even if I hate the experience, if I dislike the experience, and there's been plenty of times where I've gone and I've done styles of yoga, or I've gone and I've practiced with certain teachers, and I'm like, I already didn't like that. But that in itself is a process of learning, because I then have an opportunity to be more articulate with why, right? Because to just be like, I didn't like that, is not enough. It's simply not enough. That is the surface level you're bypassing by giving yourself that as the kind of like the quantifier of, I'm not going to do that again. No, I didn't like that. It wasn't for me. Why? Because that then requires a little bit of unpicking. What was it that you found challenging about it? What was it that didn't connect for you? What was it that rubbed you up the wrong way? You know, like all of these things are very interesting questions to have. And like often I find that an experience that I go to and I dislike helps me more, because I then have the opportunity to really assess what was going on in those moments and perhaps why I was thinking the way I was thinking, versus somewhere that you go and you gel instantly. You know, to gel instantly is great because that's going to be the path of least resistance for people going in. But I think that there's validity in both. And to have the opportunity to be like, okay, I'm going to try a few of these things out. I'm going to jump onto Instagram and I'm going to do one or two for free. And then I'm going to jump on a Zoom or whatever it happens to be. And I'm going to try a few different teachers or, you know, whatever is going on, until you find, here's a person that I kind of resonate with. I like their style, their vocabulary, the language that they're using, the music that they're playing, like whatever it is, you know, there's all the kind of like expression of individuality that comes through each teacher. So everyone is going to be a little different, you know, and as a teacher, I myself know that I'm not for everyone. And I think that that's okay. But I show up and I share from a place of authenticity with me. And then the people that resonate with that will be the people that come back, versus if people don't, you sort of don't get on with what I'm saying, that's okay. And it's not that you don't get on with yoga. It's just that you aren't vibing with the way that I'm sharing it, you know? And that again is then the same thing with the styles. There's a lot of different ways to do it. The thing that I'm best known for is really strong dynamic practices. But if you've just been blasting yourself in the gym 5 days a week, you might not have that. That's then when you might think, this is going to negatively impact me because I'm reworking a lot of this strength stuff after I'm already tired from doing the strength stuff. So if you were someone that's wanting to balance that a little bit more, maybe you don't want to come to the dynamic sweaty practice. Maybe you want to go to something that's a little bit more chilled. So you might go to something that's a little slower, a little more gentle. And again, factor in your personality type. When I started to practice, I went to the slow and the gentle because I thought that that's what I needed, and I hated it. It was terrible. And I ended up in the dynamic thing because I enjoyed breaking a sweat and I enjoyed feeling like I was getting a physical workout as well as all of the other benefits that went along with that. So, you know, something else to bear in mind. And then the whole yang yin thing, as you said, most of us do way too much yang and not enough yin. But yin often, especially if people are quite tight or quite resistant in their bodies, is a real difficult one to get into because you're going to be in those postures for a much longer time. There's going to be a lot more kind of mental chatter. And if you're not already familiar with your way of how you are able to step back and observe and how you're able to really relax and let go in those moments, it can be a great, great struggle for people. It has such amazing benefits, but it can be a little bit more difficult to get into if you are very much a type A, if you're very much a kind of a yang, go, go, go sort of person. You need some, but maybe then a blend of a class, because you can do like a yang to yin class, for example, where it's sort of like 45 or 50 minutes of kind of dynamic movement. And then the last bit will maybe be like two or three poses that are a little bit slower, a little bit more chilled, a little bit more releasing before you close in your shavasana. So again, that's something else that will be very common on a timetable. So might be something really great that that gives people a chance to experience both sides of the spectrum at one go.
Yeah, that's a really great idea, actually. And I guess it's all relative. If you're used to blasting yourself in a spin class and then you come and do a yoga class, I mean, perhaps not your classes sound seriously strengthening, but some other vinyasa flows might be a bit more yin compared to what you normally do. And especially here, having an exercise where you have that vinyasa at the end, where you just get a chance to like basically have a little nap. Like there's nothing wrong with that before you head
yes,
home.
Yes, the shavasana. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
After the nap. So tell us where people listening can find these. What are the website addresses? What's your Instagram?
So if you're looking for me specifically, the Instagram is Magesy, Magesy. And my schedule will always be there. It's also up on magesy.com. If anyone is sort of like further down the road and wants to consider yoga retreats will all be on the website as well. Anyone considering doing yoga teacher trainings are all on my yoga school site, which is empoweredyogaschool.com. If you are looking for online classes. There are some, I have some yin ones saved to my IGTV. So if anyone wants to have a little dip into the world of yin, some nice relaxation stuff. And I have it all split up by body part. It's on there. They're kind of like 25, 30 minute practices. So nothing too long in terms of an investment. So it could be a great place for people to start as a resource. I do some other classes live. They're mainly kind of like special events. So I'll just post about them as they go along. If you are an app user, you can find me on Fit, F-I-I-T. I'm one of the yoga trainers on there. And all of those practices, again, are kind of somewhere around 20 to 45 minutes long. Nothing really much longer than that on there at the moment. I've got my own on-demand stuff coming out in the new year, which will, again, all be posted all over the website and social media. So if people want to stay in touch for that, they can do. And if you are in London and fancy coming down and doing a class in real life, I am the head of yoga at Cycle, P-S-Y-C-L-E, and it's cyclelondon.com that you can see my schedule there. At the minute, it's 6:45 on a Wednesday night and 10:15 on a Saturday morning.
Hashtag Wellness Wednesdays. Perfect.
Sounds good.
Oh, thank you so much, Chris. It's been an absolute education. I feel like I've learned so much, and I think that everyone who listens to this will benefit and feel inspired. And hopefully you'll see a few fresh faces in your...
Yeah, if anyone does come to class off the back of this, like, please come and say hello and say that it's why you're there. Because it's always really nice to connect with people, especially new people that I don't know by name in the beginning, and it's great to hear that these things reach people and have a positive impact. So yeah, please come and say hello if you do come to class, either virtually or in real life.
Perfect. Yeah, they'll have to wear their Let's Get Men Talking t-shirt so that you know.
Yeah, exactly. Spot them.
Oh, Chris, thank you so much.
Thank you.